I'm about to have a conversation with Dwayne Fields. Dwayne has an incredible story. He moved to the UK from Jamaica at age 6 and grew up around gang culture in inner city London. He was a victim of knife crime at 19, but then his whole life changed after he was nearly shot in his early 20s. This was a wake-up call, and Dwayne decided to start getting out into nature and pushing himself to the limits. By 2010, he'd become the first Black Briton to walk to the magnetic North Pole. He's now preparing an expedition to the South Pole alongside adventurer Phoebe Smith, and he's all about mentoring kids to help them get out into the countryside too. He and I are both Scout ambassadors, so it only felt right that we record our chat at Baden-Powell House.
I'm Megan Hine, survival consultant on shows such as Man vs. Wild and Running Wild with Bear Grylls. This is The Power of Adventure, a podcast setting out to find out what adventure really means.
Hey! How are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Good, I've been really looking forward to this actually, because we only ever seem to meet at nice do's.
Nice do's, but it feels nice. Of course. How are you doing? Where have you been?
I've just come back from Italy actually.
And look, do you know, you've got this thing where every time I meet you, you've always just come back from somewhere exciting.
Yeah. I was like trying to fit everything in. It's like, yeah, I don't get to come back very often, so.
Oh, that's so cool.
So, Dwayne, we're here in Baden-Powell House, which seemed like a very fitting place to actually come and meet up because it's so close to both of us. And what I wanted to talk to you about is your incredible life and your incredible background as well, and why working with children is so important to you.
So, firstly, it's amazing to be here sat with you. This is the first time we've met outside of, like you said, a fancy dinner, isn't it? You know, when someone brings in a nice plate, you've got best behavior, sit up straight.
Pretend to be civilized.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm a savage in real life. Like, I'm like, what? Fork? Knives? What's that? Hand straight. No, but we are here at Baden-Powell House, and it means a lot to me because this is where I think the Scout youth movement, the center of it is, aside from Gilwell Park. I think this is the place that everyone within the Scout movement looks to for that spiritual guidance to a degree, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the Scouts mean so much to me. So it's really nice to be sat here and talking about things like the Scouts and talking about young people and all that they can achieve and hopefully will achieve in time. And hopefully I can be part of inspiring some of that, some of that culture as much as you and all the other ambassadors and volunteers and leaders do.
Yeah, because you do work outside of the Scouts as well, with children as well, don't you? Can you explain some of the work that you're doing?
Yeah, so I've been really lucky. Since about 2006-07, I've been working with young people. I worked as a volunteer teacher on my Saturday mornings. So after that rave on the Friday night, I'd crawl out of bed and get down to Princess May School on a Saturday morning for 9 o'clock to help kids as young as 7 all the way up till 16.
Because that's amazing, because your own childhood was quite unusual, wasn't it? You grew up in Jamaica.
Yeah, so my childhood, it's funny because I don't actually think it was that unusual. I think a lot of young people, like me in my childhood, found it difficult to find their place in life, and as such they just fell into a pattern of behavior, or the pattern of behavior that they saw other people take on. So for me it was starting life in Jamaica and then moving to London, which was a complete, you know, flipping the world on its head. I remember getting off that plane and walking through, I think it was Heathrow at the time, and as you're looking out these huge windows, I looked up and it wasn't blue sky anymore. It was, I was like, what? Why are there so many clouds? I know you're supposed to have, if there's not rain, why are there clouds? And I remember the whole journey home, I was looking out the car window and thinking, right, the clouds aren't going away. Where's the sun? Like, this isn't normal. And for me, at the time, I was almost 6 going on 7.
Right.
So for me, I thought I knew everything about the world. Yeah. Sun comes up, you run, you play, you mess around, you get dirty, you go home, the sun goes down, you sleep, and the cycle repeats itself. Now I was in a world where that wasn't happening anymore. I didn't see the sun come up. And it was like, that's weird. I remember as well when we were driving home from the airport, I was looking out the window thinking, right, I grew up in a place where there are trees and fields and forests all around the house. And I kept looking out the window, and every now and then I'd see a tree. I'd think, okay, yeah, we're starting to get to the forest now. And then it'll be trees gone. Then I'd see another tree. Right, we're near in the forest now. Hold on. We're back into a concrete metropolis. What's going on here? Why are there so many houses? And that for me was how different the world that I came to was from the world that I left.
And the world that you left, mm-hmm. what was that like?
Oh my, the world that I left. So picture this, Jamaica is known for its sunshine, its beaches. And there's this saying that anywhere you throw a seed in Jamaica, it will grow.
Right.
I grew up in a place where it was, like I said, lush, green. There were fields, forests, there were streams just down the way. It looked like a picture of paradise because I could walk down a lane and I could pick 10 or 15 different fruits before right. within a 10, 15 minute walk.
Yeah.
That's where I came from. I had all the freedoms I could hope for. There was me, this 4, 5, 6 year old kid. I was allowed to go wandering around by myself. There was no restrictions. I was this barefoot kid that would run around. I'd leave the house and come back. And every single time I came back to the house where my great grandmother was, because she's the one that raised me, I would come back with a new pet. One day it'd be a parrot. The next day it'd be a mongoose. Another day it'd be a cat. At one point, I was walking around. I had a pig, a dog, a cat following me, and I had a bird on my shoulder.
That's amazing. What did your great grand think of that?
Do you know what? She just encouraged me to go out, have fun. Every time I came back, she'd say, "Are you okay?" I'd say, "Yeah, I'm fine." I'd come and say, "I'd call her granny. Granny, I need the knife," and she'd say, "If you're going to take the knife, just don't break it." And that was her thing. So
no,
it
don't
was
cut yourself.
Loads
just
of.
Don't break the knife.
She didn't say, don't cut yourself. She was expecting that I'd cut my. But that's the thing. She gave me the confidence to feel like I could go out, explore, get dirty, get in trouble, get hurt, and then come back home. And for me, that was the perfect world.
Yeah, so you went from this incredible wild upbringing in out in Jamaica onto the streets of London. I mean, that couldn't be further apart.
Well, you're right. I think probably the biggest shock for me was I didn't have the freedom to roam anymore.
Right, yeah.
And I went from being this kid, again, confident. I knew everything about the world, to being this, don't go outside. There's nothing outside. You be safe, be careful, be safe, stay home, stay inside. And it didn't sit well with me.
Yeah, because that must be incredibly restrictive. I mean, on sort of a mental side, because age 6 is mm-hmm. still very young, you know, still your formative years. Yeah. And it's like you've had this, you know, very wild, very feral mm-hmm. upbringing where you've had the freedom and suddenly you're yeah. trapped. I mean, how does that affect you, like mentally?
I struggled. I really struggled to fit in life in London. Yeah. Again, I went to school, my first week in school, I remember my teacher, I walked into the room, my teacher, Miss Dimitri, placed a piece of paper on all the desks and she said, "Right, children, today we're going to draw our favourite TV characters. We're going to tell stories about our favourite TV characters." And at this stage, I didn't know what a TV character was because I'd never watched TV before. Yeah. It's never been a thing for me. And I remember immediately I started to worry. I was like, oh God, my accent's different. Don't really have any friends. I'm struggling to make friends. Everyone's going to laugh at me if I don't know what a TV character is or if I don't have a favorite one. So I remember I copied the kid next to me and his favorite TV character, which subsequently became my favorite or one of my favorites, was Popeye. Yeah. And I remember the teacher sitting down and looking at my drawing and saying, "Oh, that's a really good drawing." I know it wasn't a good drawing because she didn't even know who it was. She said, "Who is it?" I said, "It's Popeye, miss." And inside, I was slowly dying, just praying that she doesn't ask me anything else because I didn't know anything else about Popeye. And that, Meg, was the first lie I've ever told in my life,
right,
that this was my favourite TV character. So at that point, you can see a change in behaviour. I've now started to lie yeah. where I've never had to lie before.
Yeah, but do you see that? I mean, that lie is obviously like it's a survival instinct, isn't it, in you? This,
absolutely.
This terrified little child that's been bought out of, you know, this very, you know, free upbringing into, you know, what is very grey and I'd imagine quite oppressive as well. And
well, it was. It was. And I think the biggest factor in all of this was I had no clue about what I was getting into.
And do you think that that is what then triggered the adventure spirit as well? Were you kind of, was it searching for something?
So one of my first loves, or my first love in actual fact, was the outdoors and was wildlife, nature, anything natural, anything green, anything I can climb, lift
yeah,
up.
It's a huge part of it, obviously.
It's a
yeah.
big part of yeah. every, massive part of my early years.
Yeah.
And I told you a moment ago that I told my first lie.
Yeah.
That wasn't my last lie. So all through my early years and my teens, I've always struggled. In the beginning, I tried to make friends by saying, look, guys, let me teach you about what I know. And this was back in infant school as well. I went to the garden and I pulled out a handful of insects, and there were wood lice and there were some centipedes and whatever else in there. And I thought, I'm going to teach these kids about something that I love. And I ran over to a group in the playground and I was like, look. And everyone looked into my hands and saw these insects running around, and they all ran away just laughing and pointing at me. And that was such a low moment that I decided, Dwayne, do what everyone else does. Keep your head down. Say yes when they say yes. If they stood still, just stand still as well. And I carried on that pattern of behavior all the way through my teens until I think I was about 21 when an incident happened. And I had a gun pointed at me. Yeah. And the biggest problem with this, Meg, it's not the first time I'd seen a gun or a gun's even been pointed at me.
Right.
The difference this time, and the key factor, was my younger brother was with me.
Okay.
And the guy pulled the trigger this time.
This is in London?
This is in London.
Yeah.
In Stokey, Stoke Newington. He pulled the trigger and he caught the weapon and he pulled the trigger a second time. And in between the time, in between the 10 or 12 minutes or so it took for me to get home, I remember I stopped a few times and just had a look at my brother and just double-checked myself, make sure I wasn't bleeding. Despite the fact that the gun jammed twice, yeah, and I knew it didn't fire, I was compelled to just stop and check. Just check again.
Yeah.
And for me, it wasn't the incident itself that made me want to change my ways or change my direction in life. It was the fact that people were saying things like, you should get this guy back, he tried to kill you, he had a gun, you should do this, you should do the other.
So who's telling you this?
People I knew. There were some friends at the time saying, oh, you should do this and you should do that, and people I grew up with saying the same thing. And I remember thinking to myself, well, actually, don't want to do anything, I'm glad that I'm here. And if I did do anything, it wouldn't be because I wanted to. It'd be that same 7-year-old kid telling that lie about this being your favorite character. You'd be playing up to the crowd or playing up to everyone else and doing what they want to do and trying to fit in and using this as another avenue to not be isolated. And I thought, I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm going to be me. And in that moment, I didn't know what me or who I was or looked like. Eventually, I settled on the plan that I want to do something in the outdoors because that's my first love, and that's the thing that I gave up when people laughed at me and pointed at me. So I'm going to go back to that. I have a bad story about Hackney Marshes, actually. One of the most embarrassing things I've experienced happened in Hackney Marshes. Okay. I was prepping for an expedition, and one of the things that I was doing was I was pulling tires, because when I decided to do this expedition, which was the one to the North Pole, I decided, right, I'm going to do a load of research. 5 minutes later, I finished all my research. I did a Google search, and that for me was enough. It showed me people pulling tires to prepare for pulling a polk. So I decided, right, I'm going to pull tires. But I was still a little bit embarrassed about the whole idea. Like, what black person does this? I looked up, didn't see anyone. Everyone I assumed would ridicule the idea of me going there, especially being black, being from Jamaica, being from Hackney. It's not what we do, yeah, in inverted commas. So I thought, right, I'll do all my training at night in Hackney Marshes. It's big enough. I'll be alone. I'll be isolated. There'll be no one there. And I'm walking. It's about 11 o'clock at night, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And I'm walking, pulling these tires. And when you start to feel the burn, that's when you're like, oh, yeah, this is working. I'm training. I'm doing well. I started to feel confident. And sure enough, as soon as my confidence got up, I broke a corner and I could hear laughter and voices in the distance, and I stopped. And there was about 7 or 8 boys, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, and they were giggling and, you know, just being boisterous. And I thought, right, turn around now. And as soon as I said that, I don't know if they saw my silhouette with this tire and this rope around my waist and all the rest of it, but I heard someone say, what's he doing? Who's that? And I thought, oh, they've seen me. And I paused for a moment and I thought, no, hold your head up, walk tall, take a deep breath, and just march past them. And that's exactly what I did. And I remember as I got closer, they laughed and the laughter got louder and they started to cackle and it just started to sound like a bunch of, I don't know, hyenas just giggling and golden and saying things. And as I walked past, they just kept on going. And I remember as I passed them and carried on walking, I just felt like I was getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And I've never been so embarrassed in my whole life that in actual fact, I didn't go back to Hackney Marshes to train anymore. I started to do all of that stuff in Clissold Park instead. And I'd do it at like 12, 1 o'clock in the morning.
No way.
That's how bad it was for me.
And dedicated you were to this as well.
I was determined because when I first said I was going to do this, this walk to the North Pole, for example, I didn't feel like I could tell my friends and my family or anyone else because it was such a strange idea that I was almost embarrassed about it.
Right.
And I remember when I told the local paper, like, look, really need support.
Yeah.
Can you run this story? And they did, which was really badly written as well, to be fair. I remember the date was posted in the newspaper. It was printed. I had such built up energy that my phone rang and someone said,
like, nervous energy.
I was nervous, but I was also angry, and I was I had some frustration as well because I felt like, why can't I tell anyone about this? Why do I feel like I have this big thing that I want to do and achieve? Yeah. I feel like I can't tell my friends, I can't tell people I grew up with, I can't tell the football team, I can't tell family. And the date was printed, I was ready for the world to ridicule me and tell me how stupid the idea was. And sure enough, my phone rings and the first voice says, bruv, are you climbing the North Pole? And my response was, idiot, you don't climb the North Pole. It's just a place in the ground. And I was ready for an argument.
Yeah.
I was ready to go at someone as hard as they could come at me. And all the person said to me was, so what are you doing it for? And I said, well, the fact that you're asking is exactly why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I just want to be me. I just want to do things. I want to see the world. And he's like, ah, well, bruv, you can't do it. Black people don't do that. And I thought, well, that's the first problem there, isn't it? That you think we don't. And during all the research I did, by the way, I found out there was a guy called Matthew Henson, black guy. I think he was born in Washington. He was the first person to reach the Mag North.
Right.
So he did it in 1909. I think they arrived there April 1909. And I thought, when this guy's saying black people don't do it, I thought, well, actually, I'm going to do it and I'm black. So actually, you're wrong.
Yeah.
So for me, it was, I felt like I had a lot to prove. I felt like I had a lot to disprove as well.
Why the North Pole? Like, where did that come from? Because you've been at Hackney Marsh and you've rediscovered this wilderness area. And where on earth did the North Pole idea come from?
So it goes back to the night when the guy pulled the gun on me.
Right.
So following that, the weeks following that, I decided that, you know, I'm going to start doing me. I love the outdoors. I love adventure. I decided after that night that I would raise money for a charity. And a friend of mine had me do the Three Peaks with him. So I did that and I thought, I've got more that I can do. I've got more that I can give. I've done a little bit for a charity. I want to do more. And I think it was about 2 or 3 years after that, a friend of mine was shot and killed. And again, I started to look at myself and say, well, what can you do? What's there to be done? And I saw Ben Fogle and James Cracknell on BBC Breakfast. I didn't take much notice of the whole piece. And then I heard one of them say, our next expedition is to walk to the South Pole. And ding, 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 bells started going off. And what made that all the more sweeter was when they said, we're looking for a third person to join our team.
Right.
It was like, oh my God, I'm going nuts now. I'm going mad. This is it. They're saying Dwayne join our team. And I applied a couple of weeks later to join their team. I got a letter back or an email back saying, selections have started. It would be unfair to put you into the process now. Would you consider venturing to the North Pole? Looked into it and I decided, yeah, this is great. And again, it took me back to all the training and preparation. And I thought to myself, there was so many times I stopped and paused and I thought, why are you doing this? And I had to go back to that central feeling that this is about me saying to everyone, I'm doing this because I'm weird. I'm doing this because I'm unusual. I'm doing this because I'm exactly like you, but I just want to do something a little bit bigger and hopefully become more confident, gain some skills, and hopefully you'll see what I'm doing and want to outdo me or outdo your former self.
What an incredible way to view the world.
Yeah, I think it's the best thing. I don't think you should ever compete with anyone else. I think you should always wake up saying, what did I do yesterday? Can I outdo that? Do I want to outdo that? And what does it take to do more today than I did yesterday?
Yeah, and what goes into training for something like this? I mean, you'd never done anything like this before. So how did you know how to train?
Bear in mind, like you said, I've never done anything like this before. The temperatures that I would face, I've never experienced before.
What sort of temperatures is that?
Oh, gosh. So it went down to minus 40s plus at one point. They said it would have felt like minus 51 degrees.
That's before wind chill, isn't it?
That was with the wind chill. And the fact that it was in a place where constant daylight, these are all things that I've never experienced before. So I did what anyone else would have done, I think. I went to the internet.
On Google.
Yeah. I went onto Google.
Yeah.
And
I go to the North Pole?
Yeah, what do you need to do to survive in the North Pole? And I saw these things about, you know, pulling tires and ice baths, and I saw these other things. And do you know, it was just, I reached out and I did everything I could to get ready.
Yep.
I was at one stage, I was running from Stoke Newington to London Bridge and back. I was boxing, I was playing football, I'd put backpacks on with weights and just walk for 5, 6, 7 hours in a particular direction. Eventually we went to the Brecon Beacons to do some walk as a team.
So who's the team?
So we is the organization that was running this expedition. We is the two people that were on my team.
So three of you in total.
There was three of us in my team.
Right. So how was the teamwork between you guys? Because you guys, you know, there's just three of you out there. There's nobody else for miles and miles and miles. Mm-hmm. And you guys are out there on your own, like dependent on each other. And how does that, the team dynamics, develop in a scenario like that?
So my team consisted of myself, Ali, and Linda. Now, I thought having a female in the team would be difficult because I thought, bear in mind, this is me, inexperienced, 20s, never done anything like this before. I thought, that's going to pose a new challenge. When we started walking, within about 10 minutes, when actual fact in the training, I realized, hold on, doesn't really make a difference. Who you are, what you are, gender, doesn't make a difference. What does make a difference is how much you eat. honestly, so it's day one, day two, day three, and we're walking, we're covering about 16, 17 hours a day, and we're walking 15, 20 miles a day.
And that's dragging your pulk
and
behind.
And that's dragging 100 kilos of food, fuel, clothes, equipment behind us. Within about the first 48 and 36 hours, I started to get tired. I noticed that my teammates were always at the front, and Ali and Linda knew each other. I think they went to university together. They'd worked together before, and they'd do this thing where they'd stop, talk, have a giggle. I'd struggle to catch up, and then they'd walk straight on.
No.
I was like, no, what's this? I want my moment with you guys. Can you just give me a moment as well? And the reason for this was I missed a meal day one, and then I missed most of a meal day two. And I was really starting to feel it, and I wasn't eating properly. And I think day three was when I stopped, and I had a little hissy fit. I had an argument with them, and the argument was so stupid. I felt like such an idiot. I felt embarrassed. I was looking around in the Arctic thinking, I hope no one else heard that, because I couldn't bear for anyone else to know how stupid I was just then. This is the argument. What? You guys packed my pulk wrong. Why is mine heavier than it was yesterday? You added weight to my pulk. I know you did. And they looked at me. They said, but Dwayne, you packed your pulk. And I thought, you're right.
What is it that keeps you going? Because, I mean, as well as obviously there's the huge physicality side of that, but even bigger than the physical element of that is the mindset. Because you're out there, there's nothing really to look at. And you're just out there, you know, with these two people that you've sort of built this bond up with. I mean, how mentally do you get through something like that?
I think for me, getting through something like that was, mentally, it was relatively easy because I had a lot of reasons, psychologically reasons, why I wanted to do it. One, I found it really tough to raise the money for it.
Right.
I spent every penny of my student loan. I used, every time I got paid for my job, I'd split my pay in half. I'd literally starve myself so I'd have some money to put towards it. I even had to take a loan towards the end. So I put a lot of time and effort into raising the money for it. So I thought, you've put so much work into it, you can't squander this opportunity. And then there was the fact that, probably the bigger aspect of this was the fact that everyone was saying to me, it's not what we do. And by we, I don't just mean the people that were saying it's not what black people do. It was, yeah, but we don't do that in our estate.
Right.
That was the kind of message I was getting across. People would say, we don't do
this
that.
This is from
that
friends
poor
as
people,
well, is it?
People from Hackney, people from my estate, people I grew up with.
Yeah,
yeah, but we don't go and climb mountains. We don't do Arctic stuff. And it's this culture of we don't.
That's really sad.
And the moment you'd push a little bit further and say, well, what do you mean by that? They'd always say, well, I don't know anyone that's done it. And that would be their reason or excuse for not even reaching in that direction or working to get something like that done.
And has that changed? Now you've gone and done that. And I mean, this is just the start of your journey, isn't it? You've got so much more on the horizon, as well as all the things you've done in the meantime. But have you seen a change? Have you seen a thing from like, we don't do that to actually we can do this because look at Dwayne, he's out there doing it.
Absolutely. So I'm really lucky, and I always keep reiterating how lucky I am. I get to go to youth groups, youth club, different organizations, different colleges and schools. And one of the things that I notice now is prior to me getting there, they'd probably do something like an Arctic day where they learn about the Arctic, learn about past adventures, learn about what it's like in those environments. And when I get there and I talk to the young people or the students or whoever it is, I always get someone or a few of them saying, oh, I'd love to do that. And that to me tells me whatever I'm doing or whatever other people out there are doing in terms of getting more young people active in the outdoors is working, because they're no longer just saying, I want to play football, I want to music, I want to do this, that. It's, oh, well, I actually want to go as far as the North Pole.
Yeah.
So it's definitely working, definitely having an impact.
Because you have another trip coming up, don't you, which is about, I suppose it's partly about changing the face of adventure. And
absolutely.
Things. And it's We Too. And is that a play on the Me Too?
Oh, you are so, you stole my thunder. So
or you can catch
absolutely, absolutely. It's a play on the Me Too. And what, the trip itself will see me and my teammate Phoebe Smith cross Antarctica. We're looking at the best ways to make it work. But off the back of that as well, we're taking 20 young people from across the country, from disadvantaged backgrounds. We don't care what color, how smart. We don't care what your problems or challenges are. If you have your heart in the right place, and by that I mean if you want to have an adventure, if you want to protect nature, the wildlife, the environment, if you want to see more, do more, and be more, we're looking for you. Doesn't matter where you come from. And the reason we're doing this as part of the We Too Foundation that we've set up is because we want these young people to see a face and hear a voice which maybe isn't what they were used to. To be fair, over the last 200, 300 years of adventure, it's always been this really tough, strong, middle-class, white male who stands at the top of the mountain looking off into the middle distance with a look of achievement, which is great. But so much of society does not fit that e-fit.
Yeah.
And if we don't show them other faces and other images like you, strong woman in adventure, doing amazing things, I can only imagine how many young girls have looked at you and said, oh, actually, I want to be like Meg.
Yeah.
So I want to do that exact same thing. And Phoebe wants to do that exact same thing for young girls. She comes from North Wales as well. And where she comes from, I know she won't mind me saying this, it wasn't a thing where you'd encourage a young girl to go out and do adventure and be wild and see the world. It wasn't a done thing. She's told me so many stories about negative experiences she had growing up. And surprisingly, we come from two completely different sides of the world, but we face a very similar challenge.
Yes. Yeah.
And we've just decided to work together to take on that challenge.
That's fantastic. And how can, if there's any young people listening that are interested in taking on this project with you, how can they get in touch with you guys?
So the We Too is, we've got a website, which is teamwe2.com. We haven't started the selection process yet. We're still fundraising for it. There's all the information about how you can support us on the website, again, teamwe2.com. But we're hoping to start that early next year, so early 2021. And hopefully the expedition with the 20 or so young people that we will be selecting throughout 2021 will take place November, and it will last about 3 weeks. So we'll be taking them on an expedition ship. They'll be meeting people from all walks of life on the ship. It'll be geographers, geologists, astrologers, all these amazing people that they might not otherwise get the chance to meet, and they'd get to see a part of the world they probably never thought they could, would, or even should see.
So Dwayne's brought in some objects, I think, from his travels. Now, there's a very interesting looking object. I don't even like kind of try to describe it without upsetting you. can you describe this and tell us what this actually is?
So the one we're talking about is it's made out of clay, and it was made by, I think, an 8-year-old kid. It's not really that detailed. It's just a clay figure with a backpack on, carrying what looks like a stick or a walking pole, wearing a hood. And it's supposed to be an Arctic adventurer from back in the early 20th century. And it was inspired by my walk to the North Pole. So it's meant to be, I think it's meant to be Matthew Henson or one of his team. And what it's a great little piece for me. I love this model. It's the first gift I ever got because of the North Pole expedition that I did. And it was given to me by a group up in Manchester. I went to see a group of young people and we were talking about adventures. And they were inspired to make models around connected to the North Pole. And this one was made for me and given to me by an 8-year-old kid. And I love it because it, to me, says that kid was inspired enough to put something together. They learned something, they learned about something, they saw something, and it inspired them to go on to the next level, which is create something.
Yeah.
And for me, that's what adventure is about, and that's what all adventure should be about. I always say it's not about planting flags, it's about planting seeds. I don't know, maybe that young person discovered a new skill, discovered that they could make clay models.
Abstract art.
Yeah. Maybe they discovered that they can't do it and they're going to pursue something else. But the fact that they put clay in their hands and create something like this for me, it means the world to me. And it just, I hope that person was inspired to go on to do more of this or to do whatever it is that's in their heart to do.
Do you have any tips, like takeaways, of how somebody can find adventure on their doorstep?
Earlier, I said when I came to London, I didn't see many of the green spaces that I know we have. We're lucky in the UK. We've got some beautiful outdoor spaces. Here, just around London, we've got the Chilterns. We've got forests down in Kent, Hertwood Forest. We've got, Surrey Hills, all of that. We've got Epping Forest. We've got all these green spaces. And I think the best way to start an adventure is to start it locally. Do something small. Do something that you can kind of just gauge where you are. So go for a walk one day, decide to take the whole day. Maybe do an overnight camp in, you know, where it's permitted. Start small and always keep the far-flung distant places there as a hope to go to or something to work towards. But I think just start small. I'd say start locally and always tell someone where you're going, when you'll be back. And even better, share the adventure with someone. Take them with you.
Definitely, that's a great tip. And for anybody who's kind of stuck, you know, in whatever culture they might have, that's put a lot of pressure on them and says that they can't do that. I mean, you really have broken through that. And I mean, what advice do you have for somebody who's going through that same thing, that they've got this passion inside of them that they want to let out, but they just feel very constricted?
If you have something inside you that's gnawing away, if you've got a passion in your heart, I'd say follow your heart, simple as that. The fact is, people will want you to stay where they are. What's that old saying? Misery loves company.
Yes.
I think it's the truest saying ever, isn't it? Misery it's loves company.
So true, yeah.
I promise you, it won't be easy, but you'll be happier doing what you want to do rather than following the crowd.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Wow, Dwayne is so incredibly inspiring, and talk about smashing those social barriers. It's so interesting hearing about the determination he takes to every adventure to overcome that adversity. He's given me a huge amount to go away and think about.
The Power of Adventure was a TBI production brought to you by Wilbur Smith, the 21st century master of adventure storytelling. Adventure enables self-discovery through direct experience or from the perspective of someone else. Find out more at wilbursmithbooks.com.